Having seen some of Mr. Monroe's college students when they'd come to the house to beg for mercy, I estimated that this new chap was roughly their age. He had a shag of brown hair that kept falling into his eyes, and a T-shirt that spilled out over the top of his pants. His sneakers were untied, and as he was coming toward us, he stepped on one of the laces and almost fell on his face. Toby opened Chester's carrier and pulled the reluctant cat out. Chester hung from Toby's arms like Spanish moss and wore an expression that would have soured milk chocolate.
"This is Chester," Toby said, by way of introduction. "Chester, this is Harrison."
Chester turned to me with a smirk.
"What am I supposed to do now?" he asked.
"Curtsy." Harrison, I thought, what a weird name for a person.
"Hey there, kitty,"
Harrison said, instantly not endearing himself to Chester.
"And this," Toby went on, "is Harold."
"Wow," Harrison said. "What a weird name for a dog."
I looked at Harrison. Harrison looked at me. I thought to myself, this Harrison fellow really has a knack for putting the wrong foot forward.
"Well," Harrison said, "you guys are the last of the arrivals for this week. Now we've got a full house."
The door to the office popped open, and a girl with red hair and a lot of freckles stuck her head out. She seemed to be about the same age as Harrison, but she looked more tucked in.
"Harrison," she called, "do you know where Chester's file is? Dr. Greenbrier wants to look at it while the Monroes are here, and I can't find it anywhere."
"But you were looking at it this morning, Jill," Harrison answered.
"I know, I know," the girl named Jill said, shaking her head. "I just can't remember where I put it. I was hoping you'd seen it."
Harrison shrugged his shoulders and smiled at Jill.
"Wish I could help you out," he said. "But I don't pay much attention to the files. That's your territory."
Jill sighed.
"I don't know what's the matter with me lately. I'm so tired from all this work, I can't remember where I put anything anymore."
"I guess old age is setting in," Harrison said with a laugh.
"Ha, ha," Jill answered without one, and she went back inside, letting the door slam behind her. Chester gave me a look that said he was clearly unimpressed with the staff. The door opened a third time, and Dr. Greenbrier stepped outside with the rest of the Monroes. I became nervous at once. There's nothing like the sight of a white jacket with creepy little stains all over the front of it to get the old heart pumping. Dr. Greenbrier walked in our direction, his movements steady and unwavering. The light reflected strangely off his glasses, so that it was hard to see what was going on under his thick, bushy eyebrows. When he spoke, his words came as slowly and evenly as his steps.
"Hello, Chester. Hello, Harold," he said to us both, as if he were not sure which of us was which.
Chester was apparently as delighted to see Dr. Greenbrier as I was, since his response to the doctor's hello was to begin hissing and shedding hair frantically all over Toby. Dr. Greenbrier just smiled.
"Now, now, Chester, what's the matter, You're not afraid, are you?"
I suppose his words should have been comforting, but I could feel myself beginning to shake.
"You're both going to have a wonderful time here at Chateau Bow Wow while your family is away, aren't they, Harrison?"
Harrison looked at Dr. Greenbrier as if he were crazy. The doctor turned back to us.
"Harrison and Jill are going to take good care of you. There's nothing to worry about."
Mrs. Monroe seemed a little uneasy.
"Are you sure everything will be all right, Doctor?" she asked. "I don't mean to question you, but—"
"Everything will be just fine, Mrs. Monroe," he answered her sharply. "Surely you don't question my staff?"
Mrs. Monroe's eyes grew wide.
"No, of course not," she answered, taken aback.
"Harrison has worked for me for 3 summers now, and Jill is studying to be a veterinarian. I trust them both completely, as should you."
"But we thought you'd—" Mr. Monroe started to speak, but was cut off by the doctor.
"Yes, yes, I know. But I simply must take some time off. No one appreciates just how hard I work."
His face took on a pained expression as he continued.
"This has been a difficult summer. I'll work myself into a collapse if I don't get away."
With furrowed brow, he looked into Mrs. Monroe's eyes. Then his features relaxed.
Anyway, he went on, it isn't as if I were going to the other side of the world. I'll be right here in town, just a phone call away, should any problems come up. I know you have two very special pets here, and believe me, nothing is going to happen to them.
Harrison snorted.
This is a special pet? He asked, pointing to Chester.
Chester, who had calmed down a bit, began hissing at Harrison.
Oh, yes, Dr. Greenbrier replied seriously. Chester is a very special cat. Most unusual. Isn't that so, Mr. and Mrs. Monroe?
Unusual, Mr. Monroe said, reflecting.
I'd say that's just the word for Chester, wouldn't you, dear?
That's the word, all right, Mrs. Monroe agreed. At that moment, Jill came through the gate marked Chateau Bow Wow. She tripped on a tree stump as she moved toward us. Chester dropped his head sadly. I heard him sigh, I assumed in resignation to his fate.
Okay, their bungalows are all ready, she said as she approached.
She took Chester from Toby and carried him off. He didn't even resist as they disappeared into the world beyond the gate.
Bungalows are what we call cages here at Chateau Bow Wow, Dr. Greenbrier was saying to the Monroes. We think it has more class.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Monroe answered. Class, yes.
She and Mr. Monroe exchanged a look.
Well, we should be going, Mr. Monroe said then. Come on, boys, let's leave Harold to his new home.
Suddenly, Toby threw himself around my neck.
Goodbye, Harold! He cried. I'm going to miss you. Be a good dog, okay?
I felt a tear come to my eye.
Pete snickered. Yeah, Harold, he said sarcastically. Try not to stink up the joint.
I felt a bite coming to my teeth.
Bye, Harold,
Mr. Monroe said, leaning down to pat me on the head. Remember, he added in a whisper, it's good for the soul. Harold, Mrs. Monroe said firmly, be of good cheer, and keep your eye on Chester, will you? Try to keep him out of trouble. Mrs. Monroe often left me with instructions, but rarely so impossible a task as this. Still, I vowed inside myself to do my best. Toby was holding me tightly. His tears flowed freely now.
I don't want to leave Harold, Mom,
he was saying between sniffs. A lump formed in my throat. Gently, Mrs. Monroe separated Toby from my neck. As she led him by the hand to the car, Harrison took me by the collar to the waiting gate. Just as I was about to enter, I looked back at Toby, who was waving to me sadly. A tear at last escaped my eye, and I turned to step through the gate. Harrison pulled the door shut, and Chester's words popped into my head. Abandon all hope, he had said. Ye who enter here. Once inside the gate, I got my first real look at my new home, as Mr. Monroe had called it. Chateau Bow Wow consisted of 9 bungalows. Whatever they were called, they looked like cages to me. These stood on 3 sides of a big grassy play area, which Harrison referred to as the compound. The 4th side of the compound was the back wall of the house. A door in this wall led directly into Dr. Greenbrier's office. This door and the main gate seemed to be the only ways to get in and out of the place. A high wooden fence stood behind all the bungalows. It was impossible to see over it, and the only relief from the drabness within was the presence of a few trees here and there. Oh well, I thought. I had been right about one thing. The Waldorf Astoria, it wasn't. Harrison led me to the first bungalow we came to after entering the compound. I was relieved to see that Chester was being housed next door. After Harrison left me, I whispered to Chester through the wall.
"What's it like where you are?" I asked. "This isn't so bad. I've got a nice carpet on the floor and a couple of rubber bones for chewing. It's not home, but at least they've tried to give it a personal touch."
"Oh, really?" Chester snapped back. "Like what? Aside from a disgusting-looking lump of cloth hanging from a string in here, there isn't much in the way of interior decoration."
"Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Chester."
"It looks as if it's been hanging here since they built the place," he went on. "Probably supposed to be some sort of cat plaything. To tell you the truth, it looks like a mouse with a serious medical condition."
"I'm sorry," I said again.
"Probably got that way from eating the food here," he muttered.
"Oh, this is nice," I said, noticing my food dish for the first time. "It says Doggy's Din Din on the side. Does your dinner bowl say anything?"
There was a long silence from the other side of the wall.
"Chester?
Chester?" "I hear you, Harold."
"Does your food dish say anything?"
"Yes, Harold. It says, Tuna Tonight, Kitty's Delight."
"Oh, that's cute, Chester, don't you think so?"
"I may throw up."
"Pardon?"
"Never mind, Harold."
After a pause, Chester spoke again.
"Harold."
"Yes, Chester?"
"This place is a loony bin, Harold. Any place that has a dead mouse hanging on a string as guest room decor is a loony bin."
"Oh, Chester, I think you're exaggerating," I started to say, but I was cut off by a sudden burst of barking from the two dogs in the bungalows directly across from ours. Straight ahead of me was a bulldog in a white turtleneck sweater. Next to him was a French poodle. They seemed to be in the middle of an argument, and it was the poodle who spoke first.
"Oh, yes, yes," she was saying. "Over and over you say the same thing. But don't think I am so easily fooled, Monsieur Max. You cannot pull the, how you say, wool over these eyes so easily."
"Louise, lower your voice," the bulldog replied. "Everyone can hear you."
"Let them. I do not care. Why should I, after what you've done to me? Humph!"
Even at a distance, I could see that Max was embarrassed. He tried to pull his head further back into the turtleneck sweater, which already threatened to engulf him. He kept pacing back and forth as they spoke.
"So?"
Louise pressed on relentlessly.
"What do you have to say for yourself, Monsieur Fancy Pants?"
"I think you're making a mountain out of a molehill, that's what I have to say,"
Max responded.
"You're making a little hello into—"
"A little hello?"
Louise shot back.
"This kind of little hello, as you call it, I will make into a big au revoir. That's what I will do with this little hello."
"Louise?"
A soft, breathy voice interjected. I strained my head to see where it was coming from. The speaker was in a bungalow off to my right, but I couldn't see inside.
"Oh, no!"
Louise exploded.
"This is too... Oh, what is that word? Oh, yes. Much. Now she wants to speak."
"Now, Louise,"
Max said, his anger building.
"She has just as much right to speak as you do."
"Yes, yes, defend her, why don't you?"
"Louise, I don't need defending,"
said the feathery voice. I noticed the speaker had a slight southern accent.
"I've done nothing wrong."
"Max is mine, do you hear me, Scarlet?"
Louise fairly ranted across the empty space.
"Georgette,"
the voice responded gently.
"What?"
Louise shrieked.
"My name is Georgette,"
Georgette repeated.
"Scarlet, Georgette, it's all the same to me. You may want him, but he's mine, do you hear? Mine."
"Louise,"
Max bellowed in a full, rich voice.
"Enough. I've had enough of your wild accusations. Now let it be."
There was the sound of a crash, and Louise vanished to the back of her bungalow. Max looked sullenly out into the distance.
"Oh, dear," Chester said dryly next door. "I do believe Louise has thrown her din-din dish against the wall."
And then he let out a screech.
"What is it, Chester?" I cried. "What's wrong?"
Something landed on my door. I don't know what. What?
"You've got to help me,"
a new voice hissed eerily. There was the sound of wire rattling.
"I can't take it any more."
"Chester, is that you?" I whispered. "Is this some kind of joke?"
Suddenly, a head appeared upside down over the edge of my bungalow. I jumped and hit my own head on the ceiling. That must have jarred my visitor, for he flopped to the ground before my door.
"You're new here, aren't you, Buster?"
he snarled.
Yes, I am,"
I replied, trying to size up the vision before me. He was a cat, that much was clear. but a cat unlike any I'd ever seen. He looked like a walking, talking, patchwork quilt. He glanced furtively over his shoulder before he spoke again, and then it was in a low, intense whisper.
"Tuesday," he uttered, "over the wall. Don't tell the others, just you and me."
"Just you and me," I repeated. I didn't have a clue as to what he was talking about.
"Shh," he said quickly, "not so loud. We'll get out of here, pal, don't worry about it."
"Oh, I'm not," I answered. "At least, I think I'm not."
"Okay, just keep cool."
Again, he looked around him.
"Watch out!"
he snapped all at once.
"It's them!"
And he was gone. I cast my eyes in the direction he'd just been looking, and saw Harrison and Jill coming with our dinners.
"Oh, no," Jill was saying. "Will you look at that? Lyle's gotten out again. He's a regular terror. Come on, Lyle, let's go now. Come on, be a nice kitty."
Lyle swept by my bungalow, flattening himself against it as if trying to escape a searchlight. I could see he was the very same cat who had just been talking with me. Harrison swooped down on him suddenly and had him back in his bungalow a few seconds later. I heard Lyle muttering under his breath all the way. "You know," Jill said to Harrison, as he returned to passing out our dinners, "we're going to have to do something about that cat. He gets out of his cage all the..."
"Bungalow," Harrison mumbled irritably.
"Right," she said. "I stand corrected. Oh, by the way, I found Chester's file. It was under your stack of comic books."
"Oh?"
Harrison looked up from Max's bungalow, a puzzled look on his face.
"I wonder how it got there."
"That's what I wondered," Jill said. "Why do you read those things anyway?"
"Comic books?" Harrison shrugged. "It's something to do," he said simply.
Jill stopped where she was and regarded Harrison. Shaking her head, she said, "What are you going to do, Harrison? Read comic books all your life? Don't you want to be something?"
"You mean go to college like you?" he asked. "No, thanks. I don't have the time. I want to retire at 21. All I have to do first is make $1 million."
"Oh, is that all?" Jill replied. "And how will you do that, if I may ask?"
"That is what I haven't figured out yet. But don't worry, I will. I'm thinking all the time."
"I'll bet you are," Jill said. "I'll just bet you are."
"Oh, I am."
There was a growl of thunder.
"We'd better hurry," Harrison said. "It may start raining."
Quickly, they finished dishing out our food and started toward the door. Jill turned back.
"Okay, everyone," she called out. "Enjoy your dinners. I'll check in on you later."
I stared down at the fare that had been set before me and wondered what Chester had been so worried about. After all, any place that would put a sprig of parsley on top of a bowl of dog food couldn't be all bad. Mold and rainwater, indeed. I dug in. It was much later that night when we first heard it. Jill had already checked in on us as promised, and now the sounds of snoring and deep breathing convinced me that most of the guests at Chateau Bow Wow were already fast asleep. I was thinking what a strange bunch they were. Max, Louise, Georgette, Lyle, Dr. Greenbrier, and Harrison and Jill. Who would I meet tomorrow, I wondered. I was just about to ask Chester what he thought when...
"Oh!"
I sat bolt upright, a violent chill racing down my spine.
"Chester," I cried, "did you hear?" "Oh!"
It went again. It was a howl, of that I was sure, but a howl so terrible it was unlike the howl of any dog I'd ever heard. Apparently Chester felt the same way.
"Werewolves,"
I heard him utter from his bungalow next door.
"Oh, come on, Chester," I said. "You're letting your imagination run wild."
"Werewolves," he exclaimed again, as the howls reverberated through the night air, alternating with the thunder, which was growing in loudness and intensity.
"Beware,"
Chester hissed at me.
"Beware."
"Oh!"
went the cry in the night. There was a sudden silence. Exhausted, but unable to sleep, we sat side by side, staring into the blackness before us. I held my breath in anticipation of the next sound I would hear. As it turned out, it was Chester.
"Chateau Bow Wow My Foot," he uttered in a deep, throaty voice.
"Welcome to Howliday Inn."
Chapter 3. An Uneasy Calm. I awakened to the sound of rain pelting the roof above me. As my eyes began to focus, I found myself staring at the words, "A Bow Wow Breakfast." After a moment of confusion, I realized I was reading the side of my new food dish. What I saw when I raised my head a little was not what I personally would have described as a bow wow anything. My dish was heaped with some sort of grayish gruel that was rivaled in dreariness only by the day outside. Perhaps Chester had been right, after all. "Chester," I called out over the patter of the falling rain. "Chester, are you there?"
"Of course I'm here," he answered churlishly.
"Where'd you think I'd be on a day like this, out on the golf course, perfecting my putt?" "How did you sleep?" I asked, ignoring his early morning grumpiness. By this time in our lives together, I was used to it.
"Oh, fine, fine. Why should I let the incessant howling of werewolves disturb my slumber?"
I didn't take up the issue of werewolves with Chester just then, because I'd finished eating my breakfast and discovered the words, "Have a nice day," at the bottom of my dish.
"Chester, does your food dish..."
"If you're going to ask me to discuss the attack of cutes this place is suffering from, I refuse," Chester grumbled. "If I wanted my fortune told every time I ate, I could have gone to a Chinese restaurant." And with that, he let out a great sigh and went back to sleep. I could tell that any attempts at further conversation would prove futile. So I fell back asleep, too, waiting for something else to happen, and wishing I were back home. By the time I woke again, the rain had stopped, and the something else I'd been waiting for was about to happen. Harrison and Jill were going from bungalow to bungalow, opening the doors.
"Okay, animals, let's go,"
Harrison was saying in a bored sort of way.
"Exercise time."
"Thank goodness it stopped raining," Jill called out. "I thought I'd go crazy if I had to spend another minute working on those charts."
"There's still the office to clean," Harrison said, "and the storage shed."
"Harrison," Jill replied, "we don't have to do it all today."
"Oh, yes, we do,"
Harrison answered with some urgency. Jill put her hands on her hips and looked at Harrison with wonder. "You're really something. You know that, Harrison?"
"Am I? Gee, thanks."
"I didn't mean it as a compliment."
"Oh."
"I mean you blow hot and cold. Like yesterday, all you wanted to do was lie around and read your comic books all day. Today you can't stop working, and you're driving me crazy. What's with you, anyway?"
"Who knows?" Harrison replied. "Maybe I'm getting ambitious. You'd like that, wouldn't you?"
He smiled in Jill's direction, revealing the remnants of that morning's breakfast neatly lodged between his two front teeth. In disgust, Jill turned away and poked her head inside my door.
"Good morning, Harold," she murmured softly. "I hope you had a good sleep, your first night at Chateau Bow Wow."
I allowed myself to be coaxed out into the muddy outdoors. I wasn't too thrilled with the condition of the ground, but was happy just to have the chance to stretch my legs and move about.
"Where is that storage shed, anyway?" Jill asked after a moment, continuing her conversation with Harrison as she unlocked Chester's door.
"Out back," Harrison answered, pointing to the far corner of the compound.
"Right outside the fence near Howard's bungalow."
"Oh.
But there's no entrance from here. You have to go around the outside wall," Harrison went on. "That's why it's such a pain to clean."
Jill groaned. "That's too bad," she said, picking Chester up and stroking him. Chester's face looked like a car accident. Obviously, he had not slept well at all.
"Well, I guess we'd better get to it."
She put Chester down and headed for the gate.
"Aren't you forgetting something?" Harrison asked.
Jill looked blankly around her, then quizzically at Harrison.
"Lyle," Harrison said simply. "You didn't let Lyle out of his bungalow."
Jill shook her head slowly. "Oh, of course," she said at last. "I guess I'm just so used to Lyle getting out all by himself, it doesn't even occur to me to unlock his door anymore." I watched as she opened Lyle's door and then walked to the gate, tripping over a small rock that was in her path. Watching her, Chester dropped his head and moaned.
"All right, everybody," Harrison called out. "Hurry up and enjoy yourselves before it starts raining again."
And then he, too, went out the front gate, carefully locking it after him. Chester and I looked back to discover Max bounding spiritedly in our direction. With his natty turtleneck sweater and his square shoulders and jaw, he resembled the captain of a college football team. I remarked on my observation to Chester, whose only response was a rather anemic, "Yay, team, rah, rah, rah." Then he added, "If he says anything athletic, I'll scream." Max stopped abruptly before us.
"Want a jog?"
he blurted out. True to his word, Chester let out a blood-curdling screech and immediately turned on his heels. Max appeared to take it in stride.
"I'm Max," he said.
"I'm Harold," I replied politely, "and this is, that was Chester," I added, introducing Max to Chester's retreating hindside.
"Pleased to meet you both,"
Max said with a nod to Chester's tail. He returned his gaze to me.
"So, Harold, you want a jog?"
I remembered the one time I'd tried jogging with Pete and Mr. Monroe, and had had to be carried home on the back of Pete's bike.
Well, no, not really. I stated emphatically.
"Helps work out your aggressions," Max countered.
"I don't have any aggressions," I said honestly. Max seemed disappointed.
"So you don't jog, eh?"
he asked a little sadly. "No," I told him again, disappointed that he was disappointed.
"Well then, now's the time to start. Come on."
I could see that Max was not going to be a pushover. I, on the other hand, was and always have been a pushover. So before I could say anything more, I found myself trotting somewhat breathlessly alongside Max.
"The thing is," Max said after a moment, "you have to get your exercise when you can around here. They only let us out for a few hours in the afternoon. Of course,"
and he looked around him before he continued,
"it's easy to unlock the doors from the inside. Anybody can do it, Harold, even you."
"Oh, thanks," I said. Or at least, I think that's what I said. I was having a little trouble getting my words out and breathing at the same time. In a burst, I asked,
"Do the others know?" "About getting out? Oh, sure. Everyone knows how to do it. I'll show you later. Lyle's the only one dumb enough to do it when Harrison and Jill are around. The rest of us wait until after supper, when they've gone home."
Suddenly Max called out,
"Taxi! Taxi!"
I thought he'd completely flipped. Max, I said, "I'm not sure how to tell you this, but I don't think there's a cab for miles of this place. Besides," I went on between wheezes, "if you're getting tired, we don't have to ride. We could just stop running."
"You don't understand," Max said, without once stopping to catch his breath. "I'm not calling a taxi. I'm calling taxi."
He nodded to my right, and I glanced over to see one of the oddest-looking dogs I'd ever encountered, waddling frantically in our direction.
"What kind of dog is this?" I asked.
"Who knows?" Max replied. "I don't think poor Taxi himself knows for sure. He's one part of everything, I guess. He's a good mutt, though. A little on the slow side, if you get my drift, and he tends to be something of a clinging vine, but..."
"What do you mean?" I asked.
"I don't know what it is, but some days he sticks to me like glue. Seems to think the sun rises and sets on me,"
Max said, without apparent displeasure. Taxi joined us then, falling into step beside Max. He regarded Max with a look that was one degree away from idol worship. I could see what Max had meant.
"Hi, Max," he said.
"Hey, Taxi, how you doing?"
Max replied gruffly.
"Taxi, I want you to meet Harold."
Taxi nodded absently in my direction.
"How are you feeling today, Max?"
he asked.
Not bad, not bad. Taxi, I said, I want you to meet Harold.
Once again, Taxi nodded his head in a vague sort of way, not really acknowledging my presence. Of course, at that moment, I was wondering how much longer it would be before my presence became my past. I could barely catch my breath, and my tongue was hanging somewhere around my knees.
"Had enough?" asked Max, brimming with energy. I guess you have. Come on, let's head for the cooler and take a break.
At the community water cooler, my breathing returned to normal, and Taxi noticed me at last.
Oh, hello,
he said as if seeing me for the first time.
Who are you?
I'm Harold, I replied.
Harold. Harold,
he said, a puzzled look on his face.
Where have I heard that name before?
I just introduced you, Max said.
Oh.
I looked at Taxi. Max was right. He really was on the slow side.
Are you okay, Max? You're really feeling all right?
Taxi asked.
Sure, sure,
Max snapped, a little irritably.
Why do you keep asking?
Well, after that fight last night, I mean...
Oh, that, Max answered.
Taxi and I looked at Max as his face grew red beneath his hair. When he returned our gaze, he looked a little embarrassed, and not just a little angry.
Ugh, women, he uttered. What a nuisance they are sometimes. That Louise can be so unreasonable.
I glanced over at Louise's bungalow and saw that she was watching us. I felt a little sorry for her. Max went on.
Just because Georgette and I have said hello a few times, she thinks we're going to run off together.
He looked about him, and then in a low voice added,
As if we could get out of here even if we wanted to.
Taxi nodded his head in sympathy. He looked up at Max with wide eyes and sighed deeply.
It must be pretty hard sometimes, he said.
Yep,
Max grunted.
Women. Sometimes I think I'd be better off without them.
There was a moment of silence. All at once, Taxi's face lit up.
Oh, Max,
he said excitedly.
You just reminded me of this television show I saw last week. The man said just what you did.
What's that? Max asked.
Women. Sometimes I think I'd be better off without them,
Taxi repeated.
And then what did he say?
Max asked.
Nothing. He murdered his wife.
I looked at Taxi. He looked at Max. Max stared straight ahead in the direction of Louise's bungalow.
That's terrible,
he said softly. Taxi just shrugged his shoulders and began drinking again. He looked up after a moment, water dripping from his lips, and said,
I don't think so.
I looked at him in surprise. How can you say such an awful thing? I asked.
Oh, I wouldn't,
Taxi said. But you just did.
Did what?
Say such a thing.
Did I?
I was getting confused. Yes, of course you did. You just said it wasn't such a terrible thing for a man to murder his wife.
Oh,
Taxi said, thinking it over.
Well, I guess I must have meant it then.
I could see that holding a conversation with Taxi was definitely going to be a challenge.
She wasn't a very nice person,
Taxi added, as if that made everything okay. Still, there's no reason, I started to say when Max cut me off.
How'd he do it?
He asked suddenly, turning his gaze from Louise's bungalow to Taxi.
Poison,
Taxi answered simply, and then,
in her soup.
Was Max's only reply. I observed him for a moment. He must have noticed me, for he laughed suddenly and said,
Well, that's one way of handling women, I suppose.
I suppose, I replied, not at all sure I liked being part of this conversation.
Yes, Max went on thoughtfully. Murder is one way. Murder in its infinite varieties. Poison, stabbing, drowning, strangling.
Split pea.
Taxi interjected. Max and I looked at him.
He put poison in her split pea soup,
he explained. Oh, I said.
Ah,
said Max.
Yoo-hoo, called a new voice. We all turned and saw a tiny white French poodle standing a few feet away.
Georgette,
Max whispered.
Good afternoon, Max.
Georgette cooed as she approached the water cooler. She smelled of honeysuckle and magnolias. She also smelled of trouble.
How you doing after that terrible fight? I just felt so awful, awful bad about it. I couldn't sleep a wink all night worrying about you.
And here she yawned, showing us, I gathered, how much she had suffered on Max's account.
Don't believe a word of it,
Taxi whispered to me. Max started pawing the ground self-consciously.
Ah, shucks, he said at last. I'm fine today. Thanks for asking.
Oh, that's silly,
Georgette replied.
What is?
Max asked, grinning openly now.
Thanking me for caring about you,
Georgette answered.
Ah, shucks, Max said again.
It struck me that when Georgette came around, Max's vocabulary suffered. It was then I noticed that Louise had joined us.
Huh,
she exclaimed.
Oh, shucks, says Monsieur Max. I come over here to tell you that I am, how you say, sorry that we have had our little fight, and what do I hear? Oh, shucks. Well, mon ami, is that what you will say when I am no longer around, eh? Oh, shucks, because if you are keeping this up much longer with Hester Prynne here...
Georgette,
Georgette said softly.
Georgette, Hester, what am I carrying? If you think you can have your Louise and your Mademoiselle or shucks, too, you are sadly misshapen.
I think she meant to say mistaken, but she was so overwrought at this point, it was understandable that the word came out wrong. I wanted to console her, but she left us with a grand flourish before anyone, including Max, could speak. Just as she was about to reach her bungalow, Lyle suddenly pounced on her back.
"Bombs away!" he cried.
Louise screamed,
"What are you doing? You are a very crazy cat, you nutty Lyle, you! Get off me this instant!"
Lyle didn't seem to be paying any attention to Louise's screams. In fact, it appeared that he was talking to someone else entirely.
"Ace 1 to 4-7, come in. 4-7, have bombed the target area, meeting resistance. Roger, over and out."
Max ran over to Louise to help.
"Lyle," he commanded, "stop this at once."
"Don't you be helping me," Louise cried. "I will take care of myself. Merci you very much."
Max backed off, tucking himself as far into his sweater as possible. Louise turned her head around so that she was staring directly into Lyle's eyes. Lyle mumbled under his breath, as if talking into a headset.
"Enemy contact! Enemy contact! Stand by! Mayday! Mayday!"
"Now you listen to me,"
Louise said in a low, threatening tone. Lyle's eyes went wild, and he stopped talking immediately.
"We all know about you here. Do not think we are playing the fools. You have been driving us all... what is it? Ah, yes, pineapples."
"I think she means bananas,"
Georgette whispered across the way to no one in particular.
"But I, for one, have had enough. Do you understand me, Monsieur Lyle? Enough pineapples you have driven me. You will not make me into a fruit salad, n'est-ce pas? Now, get off my back, and do not ever again use me for a landing stripe."
Lyle hissed at her and jumped off her back. He dashed to the other side of the compound, and then he turned suddenly and faced her.
"You haven't seen the end of me, toots," he shouted. "No one talks to Lyle like that and gets away with it."
"You are not frightening me, Monsieur Bombs Away,"
Louise yipped back. There was a sudden crash of thunder, which shook us all. No one spoke for a few seconds. Then there came a deep rumbling sound. I thought at first it was more thunder. Then I realized it was coming from Lyle's direction. I looked at him. He was growling at Louise. From somewhere deep in his throat, he said,
"I don't like being crossed, sister. Just watch out."
He stared at her coolly, and Louise, momentarily stunned, stared back. She looked frightened, and I wondered for the first time if indeed there was reason for her to be. Chapter 4 The Storm Gathers. All at once, Louise broke into a rapid-fire attack of barking. I wanted to check out Max's reaction, but Harrison's voice startled the thought right out of me.
"What's going on in here?"
he asked, suddenly entering through the gate. Everyone froze.
"What's all this noise? Now calm down, or back into your bungalows you go."
Jill appeared next to him, carrying a large bag of garbage. She was panting slightly.
"What was it?"
she asked.
"Oh, nothing. Just a dog fight, I guess,"
Harrison said. Dog fight, I thought. What a quaint expression. I wondered if people ever had dog fights. As Harrison and Jill turned to go, Jill tripped on the very rock I'd seen her trip over before. The bag of garbage flew out of her hands, spilling its contents all over the ground. Harrison jumped back as some of the debris landed on his shoe.
"What a clumsy oaf," he shouted. "Can't you do anything right?"
Jill's face turned red. I could see tears coming to her eyes as she spoke.
"Well, aren't you Mr. Perfect all of a sudden?"
she asked, her voice quivering.
"If you weren't pushing me so hard, I wouldn't be like this in the first place."
"Maybe if you weren't like this in the first place," Harrison retorted, "you wouldn't think I was pushing you so hard."
Jill's mouth fell open. After a moment, she spoke.
"And maybe you'd like to work by yourself the rest of the day."
"Okay, okay," Harrison replied in a softer voice. "I'm sorry. Come on, let's forget it and clean this up."
Jill, sniffling back her tears, knelt in silence and began shoveling tin cans and bottles back into the plastic bag.
"I'm sorry, too," she said quietly. "I'm just tired. It's not your fault."
They finished their task in total silence. We all sat motionless, watching them. I guess people do have dog fights, I thought. Just before they went out the gate, Harrison turned back to us and said,
"Now keep it down in here."
And once again we were left to ourselves. I turned to Max, but saw that he and Georgette had wandered off. Their heads were very close together. Taxi was watching them, too, and seemed to be annoyed. When he noticed me looking at him, he said,
"A fine thing,"
and walked away in a huff. Suddenly, I found myself alone. I could feel that a light rain was beginning to fall, and a second crack of thunder announced that the storm was about to break again. Not knowing what else to do, I headed back to my bungalow in the hopes that Chester might be around to talk to. I guess I was so lost in thought that I never saw them, but when I was almost to my bungalow, I tripped. Looking down, I discovered that what had crossed my path were two long, low dogs, the likes of which I'd never seen before. As politely as I knew how, I spoke.
"Please forgive me for tripping over you," I said.
"Not at all, not at all," said one. "Indeed, it was our fault for—" "Yes, yes," said the other, "for walking in your way."
"We weren't watching," said the first.
"Where we were going,"
concluded the second. There was a moment's silence as I looked them over. They were almost identical, and though one had a slightly higher pitched voice than the other, they spoke as if one mind were encased in two bodies. Their heads did not stop bobbing up and down.
"I'm Harold," I said.
"Howard," said the one with the lower-pitched voice.
He nodded his head once.
"And Heather,"
said the other, and she nodded her head crisply.
"We're out for a stroll,"
Howard continued, as if he owed me an explanation.
"We do like a stroll. Of course, Heather here isn't up to—"
"Now, now, now,"
Heather said, cutting Howard off.
"No need to go into all that, is there?"
She smiled vaguely in my direction, and our conversation drew to a halt. The rain began to come down more heavily then. I was more than a little relieved to have a reason to excuse myself.
"Well, it was—" I began. "Yes, yes, it was,"
Howard said eagerly.
"So sorry we have to run, but—"
"Oh, I understand," I said.
"But I'm not feeling myself suddenly,"
Heather added.
Dear, mightn't we?
Yes, yes, of course,
Howard said to her. There was a look of great concern in his eyes.
Goodbye, Harold, he said, as they turned to leave. We will talk again, I am sure. Oh, and Harold?
Yes, I asked.
Beastly sorry about that noise last night. Frightful, what? But we just can't seem to help it, really.
Heather finished the sentence for him.
Come, dear.
Quite,
was all that Howard said then. And the two of them strolled off rather more hurriedly, their heads bobbing like pigeons all the way home.
Chester, I cried as soon as I saw my friend waiting for me in my bungalow. The rain was really coming down by that time.
Chester sat licking a paw and staring into the distance. As he did not respond immediately to my calling, I concluded that he was once again in a state of advanced mellowhood. I waited another moment before I spoke again.
"Guess what?" I asked.
Chester looked at me through half-lowered lids.
"Harold, you know I hate it when you do that," he said.
"When I do what?"
"When you say, 'guess what,'" he replied with faint disdain. "How am I supposed to guess what, when I don't even know where you're coming from?"
"Oh, sorry," I answered. There was a pause.
"Harold," he said quietly after a moment.
"What?"
"I think we've established that I'm not going to guess what, so why don't you just tell me what's on your mind, hmm? I have a lot to think about, however, and I don't wish to be distracted by trivia."
"Oh, I don't think this is trivia," I said, though I couldn't be sure since I didn't know what trivia was.
"It has to do with these two strange dogs I just met, named Howard and Heather. They said they were sorry about the noise last night. Do you think they were the ones who—"
"Is that all?" Chester said sharply, interrupting me. "I figured that out long ago."
"You figured what out?" I asked. I hadn't figured anything out except that it was Howard and Heather who had been howling all night.
"That Howard and Heather are werewolves."
I couldn't help myself. I chuckled at the thought of those two little dogs being werewolves. To me, they looked more like sausages with legs, and I told Chester so.
"Dachshunds," he replied.
"Gesundheit."
I didn't sneeze, Harold.
"Oh, but you said
dachshunds.
Gesundheit."
"Harold,
put the etiquette on the shelf for a minute and listen to me.
Howard and Heather are not sausages. They are a kind of dog called dachshunds. Because of their long hair, I am assuming they are what is known as wire-haired dachshunds."
"But you said they were werewolves."
"It is my belief," Chester went on, and here he drew out his words to give the impression that what he was saying was of the most crucial importance, "that Howard and Heather are a cross between a wire-haired dachshund and a werewolf."
He paused and looked at me to check out the impact of what he was saying. There was none. With a slight tremor in his voice, he added,
"A most vile and dangerous combination."
I yawned. I knew Chester well enough to know when to respond and when to yawn. This was definitely a time to yawn.
"You don't believe me, do you?" Chester asked.
"Well, it doesn't matter, Harold. This isn't the first time you've chosen to ignore my warnings, and I'm sure it won't be the last. Just let it be said that Howard and Heather are to be watched." "If you ask me," I replied, "Lyle is the one to watch. Now there's a basket case." Chester agreed that Lyle was worthy of observation, for he too had witnessed the scene earlier with Louise.
"Indeed," he concluded, "I'd say all of the guests in this establishment deserve our careful attention." "There is an undercurrent of tension here, Harold."
He looked out at the pouring rain and the darkening sky.
"An undercurrent that will one day erupt with a sudden and terrible force."
There was a loud explosion of thunder. I jumped.
"The storm gathers," Chester commented dryly as I landed.
"What shall we do?"
I asked.
"Nothing to do. Nothing to do but wait."
He lay down then and closed his eyes.
"Meanwhile, I'm going to get some sleep, while I still can."
"Mind if I join you?" I asked, not wanting to be alone. "'Not at all,' Chester said, making room for me next to him on the rug. I was thinking how hospitable he was being, when I realized that we were in my bungalow.
"'Just one favor, Harold.'
"'What's that, Chester?'
"'When you dream?'
"'Yes.' "'Try not to smack your lips all the time, will you? "'It drives me crazy.' "'So promising, I fell into a deep sleep. "'The next thing I remember was the deafening crash of thunder that awakened us. "'Chester jumped up and ran to the door. "'It's dark,' he cried. "'Max and Taxi were in the center of the compound, barking loudly. "'What's going on?' I called out.
"'They're late with dinner.'
Max responded. He and Taxi began barking again, as Georgette ran out and joined them. I noticed how she cuddled up to Max's side, and immediately my heart ached for Louise. Since my attention went rather quickly to my stomach, however, my heart didn't ache for long. "'What do you think has happened?' I asked Chester. "'I can't go without food. Dogs aren't meant to be starved. Cats are different. Cats can live off their own fat, but dogs are—'
"'Try living off the fat on your brain,' Chester said, cutting me off.
Just then the door of the office swung open, and Jill and Harrison rushed out. Jill was wearing an orange slicker, and Harrison carried an umbrella that quickly turned itself inside out, doing neither him nor our dinners any good. I made a mental note to complain about the service, but later, at that moment, all I cared about was that our food was here at last. The storm was in full force, the wind lashing the rain against us. Harrison and Jill scurried about quickly, calling to each other across the compound. I couldn't hear everything they said, but I did pick up snatches of conversation.
"'Can't understand how we let this happen,' Harrison was saying. "'We've never been late before. It's your fault, you know. I told you to keep your eye on the clock.'
"'My fault?' Jill answered. You were the one who insisted that we clean the office after we finished the shed. Push, push, push.
Okay, Jill, Harrison said, with an exasperated tone in his voice. Give it a rest, huh?
Give it a rest, he says, Jill muttered to herself. He doesn't know the meaning of the word. Then turning her attention to us, she said, Oh, you poor things, you must be starving. Sorry, sorry, she kept saying to everyone. Sorry. As she put down the food dishes and scurried us back into our bungalows. I was so relieved to get my dinner, I hardly noticed that I'd gotten soaked by the storm. I was glad, though, when Jill suddenly showed up at the door of my bungalow with a big white towel in her hands. "'Sorry to have to interrupt you, Harold,' she said sweetly, "'but let me dry you off a little so you can enjoy the rest of your dinner.' Jill's hands felt good as she rubbed me down, and I would have happily rolled over for a complete MTR—that's massage and tummy rub—to you laymen—had I not been so anxious to return to eating dinner.
"'I don't know where my head is these days,' she said as she rubbed the hair along my back. "'I completely forgot about feeding you guys tonight, and then we raced out here so fast I left the towels inside and let the door slam shut behind me.'
She laughed to herself and shook her head. "'I guess I need a rest, too,' she said. "'Dr. Greenbrier and I have been working so hard these past few weeks. I'm ready to drop. And Harrison—but I can't blame him,' she said seriously. "'That's no excuse. It would be awful if something happened just because I let myself get a little tired and careless.'
"'Jill,' Harrison called, "'I've finished drying the rest of them. I'm going back in.'
"'Okay.' Jill shouted back above the din of the rain. I'll be right there. She turned to me and scratched me behind the ears.
Okay, Harold, that's it. Enjoy your dinner now and get a good night's sleep. Night-night.
And she was gone. I liked Jill, I thought, as I plunged back into my food. She was clumsy and forgetful, it was true, but she seemed nice enough. As for Harrison, well, I wasn't sure what to make of him. There was something about him that made me nervous. Besides, anybody who preferred reading comic books to chewing on them was a little suspect in my eyes. Later that night, I tried to sleep. But the raging storm and the determined howling of Howard and Heather kept startling me awake. And then I started thinking about what Chester had said earlier. What were his exact words?
something about an undercurrent of tension that would one day erupt with a terrible force. What could he mean, I wondered. Little did I imagine then, tossing and turning in my sleep, that the terrible eruption Chester had predicted had already occurred. Chapter 5. She's Gone. The next morning, I was startled out of my sleep by the sound of Harrison's voice. "Oh, no!" he cried. I moved quickly to the front of my bungalow to see what was going on. So did everyone else. Harrison stood in the center of the compound, shaking his head, as Jill flew out of the office door. "What is it?" she shouted. "What's happened?" Harrison pointed at Louise's bungalow. The door was wide open. "She's gone," he proclaimed. Immediately I shifted my gaze to Max. Our eyes met. His jaw fell open as a look of shock and bewilderment swept over him. "But how?" Jill asked. "This has never happened before, has it?"
"Not in the 3 summers I've worked here," Harrison replied.
Slowly, he surveyed the entire compound, looking at each of us in turn. Then suddenly he called out, "Look!" We all turned our heads sharply in the direction he was pointing. Unfortunately, I hit my nose on the wall of my bungalow, and I couldn't see a thing except stars. So it took Jill's words to make clear what it was that had so astonished him.
"Oh, no," she said. "The gate. It's open."
"How can it be?" Harrison asked. "There's no way any of the animals could open that lock."
"I don't know," Jill said, her brow wrinkled in confusion and distress. "Unless one of us..."
She stopped speaking then, and a strange expression came over her face.
"What is it?" Harrison asked. "What's the matter?"
"I did it," she said after a minute. Her voice was soft and a little wavery.
"What do you mean?"
Harrison queried. His eyebrows came together to form a hedge across his forehead.
"I did it," Jill repeated. "I left the gate open. Don't you remember? When I ran in to get the towels, I accidentally let the office door lock behind me, so I had to go back by the gate. I was in such a hurry, and it was raining so badly, I guess I just didn't notice. I..."
Her shoulders slumped, and it was another moment before she spoke again. In the interim, a flash of lightning ripped through the sky, letting us know that the storm was not yet over.